The Fan on Demand.
All right, welcome to Baseball Central for Thursday, August 21st. An off day for the Blue Jays. No off day for Kevin Barker and Jeff Blair.
Never.
The Jays. Never an off day. The Jays will start a nine-game homestand tomorrow with the first of three against Tampa Bay. They're, what, 4.5 out of the wild card? I don't know my standings
yet. That's it.
It's always changing. 4.5. They got
nine
a little,
back.
Got a little bit of help last night. Got a little bit of help last night or yesterday. Seattle loses. That's good.
Well, at this time of the year, you have to take care of yourself. Not worry about everybody else. I mean, it's past looking at the scoreboard now.
True.
You just have to go out and win as many games as possible.
True, but, well, Oakland's kind of in the wild card picture, too. The Mets beat Oakland. Seattle lost. The Yankees lost. Tampa Bay lost, although Detroit's kind of in there as well. Last night kind of sums everything up, I think. Well, yeah, and Baltimore won. Last night kind of sums up the... I mean, we might as well just...
Forget it. Don't even worry about the East.
No. But last night kind of sums everything up. Nice win for the Jays. A couple of other teams in front of them lose. But, you know, another team involved in the race wins. So, I mean, that's what it's like when you're chasing multiple teams in the wild card. 9-5 win for your Blue Jays.
Oh.
Yesterday.
You know what you do?
Colby Rasmus. I've been telling you people Colby Rasmus should be signed to a long-term contract. I've been saying that for months. Colby Rasmus makes me look like a genius.
8 seconds you've been saying that.
I know. It makes me look like a genius.
Colby closed, admit it.
He closed his eyes and ran into one, right?
I will say this. That's why it's real hard to give up on him is he does things like that. He comes in, faces one of the best left-handed pitchers that the Milwaukee Brewers have in that bullpen. And does that. That's why it's real hard. I know all the other things make it real easy just to say, wow, you know, let's not do this. Which, I mean, let's face it, it's probably going to be a mute point. And they're not going to re-sign him. But that's why it's hard for other teams that may sign him to go, oh, well, let's just not even look at him. It's that reason is because he can hit the ball to right center in the gaps for home runs off of left-handers. Now, it's not all the time. But there is that, there will be that one hitting coach with one team that says, oh, I can fix him. Go sign him.
Well, Kevin, we know that one thing about baseball people is they all think they can reinvent the wheel.
Exactly.
So, there will be somebody who'll look at Colby Rasmus and go, I got this guy figured out.
I can fix that.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
It is Kevin Barker and Jeff Blair on Baseball Central, brought to you by Home Hardware. Jonah Carey of Grantland will join us. We will talk to Jonah about a big night in Major League Baseball. Garrett Richards. The LA, that was just god-awful.
Golly.
Garrett Richards of the LA Angels, a guy who was lights out here in Toronto.
Oh, they're showing it, too.
Suffered a patellar knee injury, patellar tendon injury, running over to cover the bag at first base. And if you haven't had a chance to see the injury yet, it looks like, he is done for the year. It appears, some of the initial indications were that there's still some studies, you know, some examinations being done as to the degree of the injury. But
doesn't look good.
Not look good for Garrett Richards. And kind of Kevin, we see that, right? A lot of times guys get hurt. A lot of pitching injuries, guys get hurt running over to cover the bag. He just looked like he slipped and he kind of lost track of where he just didn't look good initially going over.
Yeah, it's a fluke thing, but you have to figure who's going to step up. You see the projected Angels rotation right there. I know they can't see it, but we can. And you have to figure Wilson's the one guy that has to step that up. You see his ERA and the things he's done. He was brought there to do this. When something happens to one of the big guys, he's the one guy that has to step it up. And then offensively, who's going to step it up?
The Angels, by the way, are calling it a, quote, significant patellar tendon injury. So
that means it's really bad.
Yes. I'll tell you what, Kevin, we are at that stage right now. It's August 21st. There's still nine more days left before in which teams can acquire players or pitchers who will go on, would be eligible for the postseason roster. I would not at all be surprised if you don't see the Angels try to get a Bartolo Colon or something like that.
Why wouldn't you? You have a guy that knows how to pitch in August and September, and He's a perfect fit. He eats innings, quality innings.
Throws strikes, pounds.
A lot of them. Yeah, he's not afraid to throw a fastball. And like I said, you can't teach experience. Mm. And this is what you need this time of the year. And that's what they're going to need. They're going to need a guy to step in, like a Wilson, like a Bartolo Colon. And this team's one team that's not afraid to spend money. They've shown that. So,
yeah.
I mean, it's not going to be surprising to see them go out and get whoever it is.
Well, and look, and they're a motivated team right now. They're in the same division as Oakland, and Oakland's hit the skids. They're in the same division as Seattle. Seattle's awfully good in taking aim and taking aim at a postseason spot. And beyond that, you know, a little bit like the American League East, I'm sure that the Angels are looking at Texas's problems and going, you know what, that's not going to last. Texas isn't going to have the type of year they're having right now, 2 or 3 years in a row. So if you're the LA Angels of Anaheim, Kevin, good time right now to go and maybe go for it.
But it's interesting that you mentioned Oakland. You've been a guy that's been around a baseball forever. Samardzija did not give up any home runs in Chicago, which is a homer's park when the ball's flying out there, the ball carries. Oakland, he's given up a lot of home runs. Tell me why that is.
I'll tell you why it is. It's because you ain't in the National League anymore,
son. But he's on a real good team in a park that doesn't give up home runs.
Why is he giving up home runs? I'll ask you.
Well, it seems to me like it's that time of the year. Teams start to struggle. You start to try to do more. Mm-hmm. It gets back to the same thing. You see Batista doing it with the Jays. When you try to do too much, it just doesn't work in baseball. It's like no other sport, and I think that's what it is. I mean, it's really.
He's also never been here before.
Exactly.
I mean, he's never been in the heat of a pennant race before. He's been counted on.
He's really went from the worst team.
Right.
To quote unquote the best team. And when you do that, and every game, every pitch matters, and now we talk about it in Toronto, that he goes from Chicago to Oakland, and now he's given up a bunch of home runs. But I saw the home runs he gave up yesterday. They were center cut. You can't do that. Anywhere you go, any team you play on, any team you face, you do that. You center cut teams. Even I think they were playing the Mets, right?
Right.
Even the Mets. You center cut pitches in the big leagues. You're seeing it now with the Jays. When you center cut pitches to big league teams, whether it's Houston, whether it's Detroit, whether it's anybody, teams that now all the swings are where they should be, guys don't miss fastballs and they don't miss them on the plate. That's why it's so important. An example, Mark Burley. It struggled since the All-Star break, second half, struggled for a while because he leaves that ball on the plate. When you do that, man, doesn't matter who you are, Samardzija or Burley.
You know, let me ask you this. I'm going to do a public service here because a longtime fan, an older gentleman who listens to the show and watches the Jays games, he wants me to ask you because he's heard you use the phrase a lot. He's heard Zahn use it. He's heard a lot of people use it. Center cut.
Mm-hmm.
What's a center cut?
Center cut means when I'm a guy like a Mark Burley, I'm a guy like a Samardzija. Now, the two guys are different because one guy is not a power pitcher and one guy sort of is.
Mm-hmm.
Meaning, no matter who you are, whether you throw 97, 98, or 83, you have to work corners. And meaning what that means is you have a plate, the home plate. You cannot throw balls on that plate this time of the year. That's what that means. Center cut means I'm in the middle of that plate. I'm not on the corners. They have a black on the that home plate because that gives that pitcher something to aim for.
Mm-hmm.
They want to stay out of the white part and pitch towards the black part. That's what you do when you're a good pitcher. A Felix Hernandez, that's what he does all the time. That's why he's Clayton Kershaw does that all the time. Mark Burley struggling because he doesn't do that now. When teams struggle, Samardzija is doing that center-cutting pitches, which means I'm keeping it more in the white part than on the black part.
I'm trying to throw a strike.
We're trying to do too much. That's what it is. Exactly. Yeah. You see it. You can even see it on other sides of the ball. I keep saying Jose Bautista, when Edwin wasn't here, is because he's trying to carry a team. Mm-hmm. When you try to do too much in baseball, it's not like any other sport. You can't try in baseball. That's hard to say, but it's true. You can't go out and try. When I played, I tried too hard, and it didn't work. Things start escalating, especially when your team's struggling and you're not doing well and you try to do too much, which means I try to swing too hard. I try to go out of the zone, and I swing at pitches I normally wouldn't do. It's just like a pitcher. I either try to throw too hard or I try to snap that breaking ball off too hard. And when you do things like that, you hang them and you throw it too much in the white part. And You see what happens with a Samardzija. That's why when you said Oakland, it just brought it up to me that I just saw the highlights before we came on the show that he had given up a lot more home runs in Oakland, and that just seems weird to me. But because you went from the worst team to the best team, and then when you start talking about it and you start thinking about it, well, it makes total sense.
He also would not be the first guy to come over from the National League to the American League and scuffle, though, either.
Yeah, but I don't think that's the reason why. I understand what you're saying, that you have to pitch to an extra guy and you have nine guys to get out instead of eight, but it gets back to the old thing. Both leagues, you still have to make pitches, no matter where what league you're in. You still have to pitch in the black part. You can't pitch. The plate's the same size in the American League as it is in the National League. It's not any different, so you have to make good pitches. And when you don't make good pitches this time of the year, nobody hitting-wise right now is struggling unless you just got caught up from AAA and it's just a different feel for you. Most guys that's been here all year know their swings. They know what they can and can't hit. They know how to set pitchers up, and that's why pitchers are not at the advantage now like they were in April and May when it was cold and everybody was trying to get the feel. It's not that way anymore. Now you have to make pitches. That's what you mean. Don't center cut pitches, which means stay out of the white part. Pitch on the black part. And when pitchers don't do it, you see Samardzija, you see Burley, you see Marcus Stroman, you see Aaron Sanchez. When they don't do it, that's what happens.
Speaking of Aaron Sanchez, you wanted to talk about an at-bat in yesterday's game. I don't know if we probably haven't been able to pull it up in video because I frankly just don't remember right now.
I wish we would have told Travis because it would have been a really good story.
But you want to talk about Aaron Sanchez's approach against
Mark Reynolds,
and just kind of walk us through.
Well,
this.
It was the seventh inning, and I think it was first and third, first and second. Regardless of where it was at, there was two guys on base. Blue Jays had just taken the lead in the sixth inning, scoring five runs. I think it was 5-2, and it was a huge at bat. I mean, they had Mark Reynolds, which is a notorious home run hitter. Can't do a whole lot other than hit the long ball. I mean, it's, you know, he's the 200 average guy with the 21 home runs. I think that's what he had. Well, you have to, that's the one guy you have to have an approach in. And this is my point when it comes to Aaron Sanchez is you're coming out of the bullpen late in the game for a reason, meaning that you're a power pitcher. You're like a guy that can throw 97 to 99 sinkers. They're not straight. They're sinkers. That's what you're there to throw. And the old saying is, we talk about it all the time. Don't get, like Dustin McGowan at one time gave up some home runs on a secondary pitch, which means your breaking ball, your slider. Don't do that. Then you have to come after a game and say, why did I throw that? Why do I have to answer to the media? Well, it was a stupid pitch. That's why you're answering for it. Well, yesterday was a prime example of a guy learning how to pitch to certain people, which is a Mark Reynolds that hits home runs in big situations. He got 2-0 on him on fastballs. He throws him a 97 sinker. He swings through it for strike one. He throws the next pitch at, I think, 98 to 99, fouls it off over the Brewers dugout, which means he's really late.
Yeah.
Super late. So it's 2-2 count. Next pitch, he hangs him a breaking ball. He fouls it off, just missed it. Well, you're thinking, I should have known. I just hung my breaking ball. I throw 99. Why would I throw my breaking ball again? Well, guess what he does?
Throws
another breaking ball. That's what I'm talking about. And he just missed it. He flew out to the warning track to Milky Cabrera. He just missed it. That's what I'm talking about. Good teams in big situations, understanding what you do well and understanding the situation and understanding who's hitting. All of those things being said, I think yesterday for Aaron Sanchez, that was a big learning curve just because of that situation. And knowing that I throw hard, I come out of the bullpen, that's what I'm here to do. Don't get beat on a hanging breaking ball. That's bad.
That was Josh Tolley behind the plate, because we've talked often, or was Navarro back
Navarro,
there?
That's what, and we've talked about this before because, you know, he sometimes loves throwing the breaking ball. Well, certain times there's certain people you can throw breaking balls with. Mark Burley, you throw breaking balls because that's who he is. That's what he does. Aaron Sanchez, no, because he's a young guy. He doesn't know Mark Reynolds. Navarro does and knows he's a notorious sitting breaking ball guy, which is exactly what he does. He fouls the fastball off to get to the hook. Well, He got it. He just missed it. What I'm saying is Aaron Sanchez, that's a learning curve. That's what you do late in games. That's how you win playoff games, get to the playoffs. That's how you do it. And I think, I hope that he understands that I throw really hard. I have really good stuff. Don't get beat with a hanging breaking ball.
Baseball history sort of will be made today. The Chicago Cubs and the San Francisco Giants will be resuming a game. The Cubs were leading 2-0 in the bottom of the fifth on two nights ago. And there was a screw up with the tarp at Wrigley Field. You've probably seen it on TV. I mean, the field was just, and Wrigley Field, you know, Wrigley Field's an older stadium, but I haven't seen a field retain water like that in a long time. I mean, it was like a lake. Mm-hmm. So the game was called off or was postponed, and the Giants appealed. Now, baseball appeals normally don't get held up, and or upheld, I should say. As a matter of fact, until this appeal, the last time a successful protest had been launched was 1986. Before last night's game, Major League Baseball, the commissioner's office announced that the Giants had won their protest that they filed with Major League Baseball over Tuesday's rain-shortened game. That game will be completed now today before the regularly scheduled game between the teams. It's probably not a great surprise because the Giants are, I mean, the Cubs are out of it, mm-hmm. but the Giants are involved in a playoff race, in a mm-hmm. pennant race. And I looked at this. This really was a no-brainer if you're Major League Baseball, wasn't it? You have to do this. I mean, the delay was clearly caused by bad work on the part of the Cubs grounds crew.
Yeah.
I don't think baseball had any other option here but to go ahead and appeal the game. We're going to be joined by Jonah Carey. We'll talk to him, Jonah Carey of Grant. We'll talk to him about this. Again, the first appeal to be upheld by Major League Baseball since 1986. Jonah Carey joins us. Hello, Jonah.
How's it going?
Going well. So I think the Giants a little happy today, I would think.
Yeah, well, I mean, it was a weird set of circumstances, really, and it seemed like they had a beef. But as you said, things just don't get overturned. You hear appeals all the time, and it's just for the sake of posterity, but nobody ever follows through on it. So it was interesting because this one came to pass. By the way, I own Tsuyoshi Wada in my fantasy league, so to hell with this overturning.
Yeah, you're not
not happy.
You should know better than to view Major League Baseball through the lens of a fantasy league guy.
Incorrect. Now that my team is deceased, that is the only way to view Major League Baseball.
Jonah Carey joining That's Kevin awesome. Barker and Jeff Blair on Baseball Central. We talked a little bit at the start of the show. We showed on TV on the simulcast the injury that Garrett Richards suffered last night, the significant patellar tendon injury, as the Angels are calling it. Jonah, would you expect to see the Angels try to make a move in the next 9 days or so, some sort of waiver wire acquisition?
Well, I would encourage people to go to Grantland.com maybe 12 seconds before I jumped on the air. My story posted on Garrett Richards and what the Angels should do and might do and whatever. There is a lot of wishful thinking mm-hmm. in August. You know, Yu Darvish cleared waivers. Well, how could that be? Yu Darvish is amazing. Obviously, so-and-so should try. He's not going anywhere. Mm-hmm. Neither is 99.9% of good players who go on waivers, even if they clear waivers. It's not likely to happen. I would say that the best-case scenario is kind of what the Dodgers did, where they picked up Roberto Hernandez, who's fine. You know, you just want a functional fifth starter. As I wrote in the story, right now, my projection is that the fifth starter for the Angels, if they don't make a move, is Wade LeBlanc. Mm-hmm. Wade LeBlanc has a 4.59 ERA and a 4 ERA this year in AAA. He's been in AAA all season. He's a 30-year-old left-handed definition of a journeyman. They could do better than that, and they really need to, because here's the thing. They are really, really have to win the division. If you get to a one-game playoff, now you're missing your best starter, so you're going to put probably mm-hmm. Jared Weaver out there, who's your second-best starter. Let's say they face Detroit or Seattle in a one-game playoff. Are you favoring the Angels with Weaver going up against Felix or Scherzer or Price? I'm not so sure that I am, even if the Angels have home field advantage. They have to win that division. They have to try to get somebody functional for a fifth starter, even if it's a Roberto Hernandez type that's still better than what they have right now.
John, speaking of the Angels, with the pitching staff, normally that means a team's going to have to score a lot more runs. And Josh Hamilton has had a tough time hitting this year. Can you put your finger on why that would be or why that is?
Yeah, well, I mean, he has always struggled with plate discipline. Even when he was at his best, he was one of those guys who was, you know, he just took a rip and that was it. And that can work, by the way. I mean, I grew up, well, not grew up, I guess I was a little bit older by that point, but I was a big fan of Vladimir Guerrero. There's nobody other than, I don't know, maybe Clemente, who was better at just swinging outside the zone and getting whatever the heck he wanted. And Hamilton was as close as you could get to Vlad for a while, particularly in the 2012 season with the Rangers. He had 43 home runs. He actually did raise his walk rate a little bit, but struck out a quarter of the time and definitely a free swinger. And even within that huge 43 home run season, if you go back and look at it by splits, first half versus second half, he had periods during the, I believe it was the second half, where he was just, couldn't hit anything. I mean, he was just flail away and miss by a foot, and that would happen, which seems crazy for a guy who put up MVP caliber numbers. Now we see maybe the bat speed slowed down a little bit combined with that free swinging approach, and it's been brutal. He's striking out more than ever this season and just generally rolling over on a lot of bad pitches, and you're not going to drive the ball if you're swinging at lousy pitches.
Jonah Carey of Grantland joins us on Baseball Central. Surprisingly, Jonah, the headline on your story is what Garrett Richards' injury means for the Angels' World Series hopes. It comes as advertised. I'm pulling your leg. It comes as advertised on Grantland, on Grantland.com. What about a guy like Bartolo Colon?
That would be an interesting move for a team like the Angels. Yeah, I mean, and he has had success in the American League, so that's certainly a possibility. He has 1 year left on his contract. It's an affordable 2-year, $20 million deal. That would be about the best case scenario. Colon is, you know, pitch for that team, for the record. I actually think that would be a great move for them if they could pull that off. The Angels don't have terrific prospects to offer necessarily, but Colon, as you know, even though he's still pretty good, is over 40 obviously, and I don't think he's necessarily going to cost a ton, and the Mets do have pitching depth, so you know, it's possible they could work out a move, and I think it would behoove them to do so, because yes, they lost Richards and it hurts their hopes, but you know, as you guys mentioned, they still have a great offense, second best offense in the league. Trout's the best player in the world. There's nobody better than Mike Trout. Get me a functional starting five or starting four in the postseason and they have a shot at it.
Jonah, as we look around the American League, you know, the story that we've kind of, in this show anyhow, we've kind of tweaked on to, just because for a lot of reasons I find the team fascinating, the Kansas City Royals. Now, they lost last night, but they continue to, they continue to make noise. They certainly continue to do more than that in the American League. They are in it for the long haul, are they? Aren't they?
Well, for this season, yeah. I mean, if it'll be on this season, that could be.
Yeah, let me. What I'm saying, they won't go anywhere this year. I mean, they're in this race to the end.
I mean, it looks that way. It's a funny team. You know, I actually got to see them in person on Tuesday night here in Colorado, and they were losing the whole game. And you sort of looked at this team and you said, "Well, gosh, where are the runs going to come from?" James Shields was pitching all right. Defense had been all right. You know, that's been their strength, pitching and defense all year long. Bullpen's been phenomenal. But you scratch your head about where the offense is going to come from. They get to the seventh inning, and they pinch hit with two outs and nobody on base with Josh Willingham. Josh Willingham quietly could be the best move made in the month of August. That's a pretty good player to get when you have to deal with waivers. And he draws a walk. And the inning kind of progresses from there, and they end up scoring three runs in that inning and take a lead, go on to win 7-2. And it's just one of those things where they bunched the single and they blinked the double and they got it done. This team is last in the league in home runs and last in the league in walks. Here is the total number of teams in baseball history who have ever made the playoffs, last in home runs and last in walks. Are you ready?
Zero.
Zero teams. It's never happened. It's never happened in the history of baseball. So this is a weird, extreme pitching and defense club, and we always emphasize pitching and defense in baseball. This is the acid test here, because the Tigers can mash, right? They have Cabrera and V-Mart and all these guys. We're going to see if it's going to be enough to hold off Detroit, because even with Willingham, it really is a weak offensive club. I'll be interested to see how it goes.
Jonah, as you mentioned Detroit, is Detroit not going to make the World Series because of their bullpen? Is that the only reason they would not make it, in your opinion?
Well, Justin Verlander turning into a pumpkin is not very good either. I mean, according to my expertise, I don't think pumpkinhood is very ideal when you have a former Cy Young winner.
Right.
That's a big problem for them. Yeah. And it's an interesting thing about why that came to pass. You asked about Hamilton. Miguel Cabrera was interviewed toward the end of last month, And they asked him, hey, what's going on with you? You know, you're doing all right. You got good numbers, but not really hitting for power. And by the way, since that interview, which was July 25th or so, he's hit zero home runs. He hasn't hit homer in almost a month here. Mm-hmm. So they asked him about that, and he said, well, I got a groin injury. I had surgery in the offseason, and that's the kind of thing you need it to stride. You need it for power. A lot of those right center field home runs that you would see from Cabrera are falling short of the warning track. If you can remember, Rasmus pulled down a ball that Cabrera hit that looked like it was gone for sure at Rogers Center where the ball carries, and it died at the wall, and Rasmus made the catch. And he went on to say in that interview, hey, I'm not the only guy that has this. Verlander is the same story. That's a big problem for him, too. So we'll see. Without Verlander at full strength, that's a problem for the Tigers. Mm-hmm.
Jonah, a lot of us who at the start of the year thought that the Washington Nationals might end up winning the National League or even going on to win the World Series, we were a little worried with the start that the team had. They have really hit their stride. They're going, I was going to say more than hit their stride, they're going for their 10th in a row against the Diamondbacks. What type of a role has Matt Williams played in this?
I mean, you know me, Jeff. I don't really believe in managers.
Yes, that's why. But
or negative influences.
I'm asking, because there was some. We thought there might be some personality issues here. We thought that there might be some a little bit of tension with Bryce Harper and some of the other players. And quite frankly, I got to tell you, I mean, I'm with you. I think we tend to overestimate managers' roles in the team. But I looked at Matt Williams' hiring and I thought, man, this might be exactly the wrong guy for this organization.
And here's the thing. I'm with you in the sense that if you have to pinpoint one thing that is important for the manager, it's to not make people mad at you and cause a mutiny. Honestly, you don't want a disenchanted clubhouse. You know me, I'm a stats guy, but we can't really quantify this. I'm still prepared to say that's the most important role. Mm-hmm. I think most managers order stupid bunts or do dumb things with their bullpen. That happens all the time. Trust me, whoever you root for, you think Gibby's bad, go look at Ned Yost. You think Ned Yost is bad, go look at Ron Washington. Everybody's about the same. I mean, I don't really see a difference. Mm-hmm. It is possible that Williams exacerbated the situation. However, I will say this. Harper was hitting 220 and mouthing off. What do you want? I mean, he has no right. He's not entitled to this stuff. I don't like the way that Williams handled it, but any reasonable manager would get his guy under control a little bit. You're going to tell me that Bob Melvin wouldn't be able to handle that situation better? I think he would. So maybe we could say that it is somewhat in spite of Matt Williams. But I think this team was so talented that, you know, I've never managed a second of anything in my life. If I went into the clubhouse, how badly could I screw it up? How badly could you guys screw it up? How badly could anybody screw it up? They have elite talent. Adding Doug Fister in the offseason, one of the biggest ripoff deals I've seen in years. They got him for nothing. And this is a year where Strasburg has been very good, but not quite what we've expected, at least until recently. And Harper has done nothing, and they're still this good. Strasburg and Harper are the two highest-profile guys on that team. If they were at full strength, this could be a 110-win club. That's how talented they are. Mm.
Joan, it was good of you to join us today, as always. It's good fun to talk to you.
Thanks, guys.
Thanks, Jonah.
Take care. That is Jonah Carey of Grantland. And he is right. The article is up on Grantland, what Garrett Richards' injury means for the Angels' World Series hopes. We've replayed the injury twice. I think that's about enough. It's a significant, quote, in quotes, patellar tendon injury suffered by Garrett Richards of the Los Angeles Angels of Anaheim. And Jonah's right. Everybody, at this stage of the season where you've got waiver trade possibilities, it's really rare to see a team do what the Pittsburgh Pirates did last year when they added Marlon Byrd and Justin Morneau and John Buck. I mean, a lot of the acquisitions, especially the pitching acquisitions, tend to be maybe fourth or fifth starter types. But I'll tell you, if I'm the Angels right now, I might be looking at trying to do something for a guy like Colon. Because I think Joan is right. I need... I'm not going to add an ace, but I need a guy that can win a one-game playoff for me.
Well, they have a couple aces. I mean, Wilson, you can say, is an ace. I think it comes down to Wilson.
You think he's the guy that has to step up.
Well, you think that's why they brought him here. That's why if something was to go astray, that one guy has to pick it up. He's left-handed. He's been there before. You know, he's won games. He's won big games. That's what you do. And then I think it gets down to Josh Hamilton again. I think he's going to have to figure ways to help out Albert Pujols, Mike Trout. I think he's going to have to be some kind of compliment, do something. And it's weird that we say that because at one time he was a really, really, really good player. Mm-hmm. Let's not forget that. But to me, it just sometimes you got to take a step back and think that maybe I shouldn't swing at everything. I mean, it's, you know, it's a consensus around baseball that you swing at everything. It's fine if you swing at strikes all the time, but when you go out of strike zones, it just makes it hard on a lot of things. So that's what I'm saying. Great players make adjustments when other things on your team is not working. And I mean, this is horrible that Garrett Richardson goes down like this, because he is a great pitcher and he's having a great year, but other guys are going to have to step up. That's why there's a bunch of guys on a team and not just one.
We should mention, by the way, that the Washington Nationals do go for their 10th consecutive win. We talked to Jonah Carey about the Nationals tonight against the Arizona Diamondbacks. That would tie the franchise high, or at least the franchise high since it's been in Washington, since it moved from Montreal, of 10 straight. And Bryce Harper did score the winning run last night. It was a pinch hit single in the ninth inning by Anthony Rondon. And the Nationals are they're really mean business. They're a fun team to watch.
It also doesn't help. You know, it helps them that the Braves can't hit. I mean, it's when you can't score runs, it's
the Braves can't hit. And if you saw that misplay in the outfield between the two Upton brothers last night,
it escalates when you have to. Every day try to keep teams from scoring runs because you can't score any. Man, that makes it really, really hard to win games. And you're seeing that the Braves are a great organization, but when you don't have everything working all at one time, then the Nationals step in and they start stepping on people's necks. This is what you do when you're a good team. When you see another good team that's down and can't do things, what do? You step in. You step on some necks, and then you run away with the division. And then when it comes into September, middle of September, you don't have to worry about winning every game. You know what I'm saying? So that's what you're seeing. You're seeing a great team run away with it. And I hate to say it, you may have called it. I mean, you did call it, I think, didn't you?
I think I did call it. I mean,
at least you're 50. You got half of it right.
Yeah,
anyway.
we'll forget about the Tampa Bay Rays for now. We'll forget about the Tampa Bay
Rays. But those were two good picks at the time.
Yes. I felt more confident about the Rays, frankly, than the Nationals. But anyhow, we'll deal with that. The Jays are off today. No off day for Baseball Central. Kevin Barker and myself will be back in a few minutes.
Cooler than Math Club and almost as cool as Chess Club. The Fan Club. Log on to Sportsnet590.ca. Back to more Baseball Central on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
You know, one day we're going to be doing that hammering thing and we're going to spill water all over the place. Yeah. It's Baseball Central.
Not me.
With Jeff Blair and Kevin Barker. An off day for your Toronto Blue Jays.
I'm very athletic.
Got nothing to do with anything. We're brought to you by Home Hardware. And Jays will get back at it tomorrow. We got Gibby tomorrow.
Yeah.
The manager of the Toronto Blue Jays, John Gibbons.
Hopefully.
Scheduled to join us. Ahead of a first game of a nine-game homestand.
Gibby owes me dinner, too.
Why?
Because the last time he didn't come on, and I said on air that he owes me a dinner at Ruth Chris. I'm just saying.
Wow.
Because, well, you know, I'm a fun person to talk to, and he didn't come on. So that's what you do. What you do when you're a big leaguer. You take the smaller folk out to dinner. Just saying.
Okay. All right. Got a lot of, I don't know what the hell you did, but got a lot of reaction on Twitter and an email to your...
Aaron Sanchez?
Your talk about Aaron Sanchez, which...
It's a good thing. It's not a bad thing.
Well, the only thing I can take from that is that people are listening to you and not to
that's
me.
That's good.
Which is, well, that's...
Is it good stuff or bad stuff?
It was good stuff.
The only thing I say is the kid's got really good stuff, and you have to learn somehow. And sometimes it takes you doing what he did yesterday to learn. That's all I'm saying.
All right, by the way, and I just want to shout out to Lee Howden in St. Catharines, by the way, who sent an email, wanted to express my appreciation, saying he finds the conversations between you and me interesting and even enlightening at times. So I'm thinking he's talking more about you than me. But I do want to go back and talk about Aaron Sanchez and that at bat. We've got some video of it now, so the folks on TV are going to be able to see it. But want to talk about it on the radio as well, because it's important. We tend to always, I think when we talk about the learning curve and guys learning things, we always talk about results. And I want you to talk about this at bat again. There's five pitches to
okay,
it.
Okay, made two really good fastballs right there. Mm-hmm. And then he fouls a fastball off, and then he has two strikes. What I'm saying is, see, he hung the breaking ball
and
twice.
And you can tell as soon as he did that, Aaron Sanchez just drops his head,
and you
he's
see
thinking,
where it went.
What am I doing?
This is what I'm saying. Sometimes
went right to the warning track. Melky Cabrera caught
it. He just missed it. That's what I'm saying. The point is that you just threw two really, really good fastballs by a sitting breaking ball hitter. Mark Reynolds is a veteran guy, and usually he's a guess hitter. When it's two strikes, most veteran guys guess breaking ball. That's why they foul the fastball off. They're late, and on top of it, it's 97 to 99, and he can't get the head out. That's what he's doing. He's trying to foul those off to get the hook. Well, only thing I'm saying is when you throw that hard and your ball moves that much, don't give him a chance to get the head out. That's all I'm saying. Think along with the game. Try to think along with a veteran hitter. And I hope this is a learning curve for Aaron Sanchez, because it was for me when I saw it, is that it's sometimes things are a little bit of common sense. If I just threw a hanging breaking ball to a guy that's sitting breaking ball, don't throw him another one. Yeah. That's, you know.
See, the next time the situation presents itself. The one thing we have seen about Aaron Sanchez, and I know you've talked about it a couple of times, you can tell when a young pitcher understands what's gone wrong. Like, I'm a big believer. I like guys, and anybody can be, when they're front running, when they're doing great, anybody can be a front runner. I like guys who understand when they've made a mistake and understand why it happened.
You saw
and
it.
You could tell as soon as he threw it, he just dropped his head.
Exactly. That's what you do when you learn. We're not saying he doesn't have great stuff. He doesn't throw super hard. We're just saying if you're going to get beat in the seventh inning when your team just scored five runs, gave you the lead, and you haven't scored runs in forever, and you haven't had a lead forever, you're supposed to come in the game and throw what you throw best. If you're going to get beat, get beat with your best pitch. That's all we're saying. And hopefully that was a learning curve, and hopefully we don't see him do it again. Because, man, when you can throw 97-mile-an-hour sinkers, trust me, I used to try to hit those. That's why I'm doing this now. Because
I was going to say, Aaron Sanchez, we know he's an up-and-comer. And speaking of up-and-comers, by the way, Daniel Norris, who is the next, in quotations, the next Blue Jays pitching prospect, he is making his last start tonight with the Buffalo Bisons. He is going into the bullpen after tonight's game. When the rosters expand, he will be pitching out of the bullpen for the Toronto Blue Jays. He will be one of those extra arms the Jays need. You can catch that game, by the way, against Scranton Wilkes-Barre on Sportsnet 590 The Fan at 7 p.m. tonight from Buffalo. Ben Wagner will have the call. The Buffalo Bisons and Scranton Wilkes-Barre. Daniel Norris making his last start.
Funny note, Scranton's the coldest place I've ever played a baseball game.
Now, were they the Barons when you played there?
Yes, they were.
Now they're the Rail Riders.
They're still the Yankees, right?
Yes.
Yeah, that's the coldest. I think we may have played there when I played in Louisville, Kentucky, again with the Reds. We played there. For some odd reason, some guy made a schedule where you play there in the first week of the season, and we actually went there. Man, I tell you what.
Is it in the valley?
It's like down in a hole, kind of. Yeah. And man, you're talking about some kind of cold. I was very excited when that was over.
Yeah, I bet you were. Another up-and-comer on a different level. Well, certainly we've got to talk about her because Monet Davis pitched last night in the Little League World Series. Her team lost 8-1. It is the highest rated, and this is no surprise, but it was the highest rated Little League World Series game in ESPN history.
That's awesome.
And she's a cover, I was going to say cover girl. People get mad when you use the phrase girl. She was on the cover of Sports Illustrated. By the way, Rob Manfred, the new commissioner of Major League Baseball, was at the game.
Pretty cool.
You know you're a big deal when the new commissioner of Major League Baseball comes out and sees you. Kevin, I mean, look, she won everybody's hearts. She's got a great smile. She appears to have the right attitude. I talked about it in primetime sports. She's using it as an opportunity to lobby for a basketball scholarship to UConn. We're gonna get ahead here a little bit, but I want to ask you: are we ever going to see? Do you think a female playing, if not in the majors? In the minors.
I don't see why we wouldn't. I think if she's good enough, why not?
We're having a little bit of fun here, but I'm asking you the question. She's got, you know, people, she's created a dialogue.
I think it gets down to not so much what would happen on the field as of it's a guy's sport. That's and how that whole thing would be taken off the field, meaning in a clubhouse, because you know she would be a girl, obviously, and you would have to do things in a clubhouse to make her comfortable. So that would be, you know, different places. She would have to have a different place to dress, and it would just be, that would be the only issue. Maybe that would be, not that she wouldn't be really good and she couldn't do it on the field, because hey, she can throw a breaking ball like Clayton Kershaw. What?
There's a terrific story in the New York Times, Scott Cacciola. I love the way the New York Times does this stuff. Spoke to a sports and performance medicine physician at the Children's Hospital of Philadelphia, Dr. Jeremy Ng, who's really well-regarded. I just got to read this, because this is, you know, the Little League tournament, players in the tournament normally range in age from 11 to 13. And this is interesting. According to this doctor, girls generally get a two-year head start with their growth spurts on boys. The average, this is funny, the average 12-year-old girl is actually slightly taller and weighs more than the average 12-year-old boy. At 5 feet 4 inches, she actually turned 13 two months ago. Mm-hmm. At 5 feet 4 inches, Davis is more than 3 inches taller than the average 12-year-old boy. Her height would put her in the 50th percentile of 18-year-old women.
Wow.
And being tall and lean is, you know, anybody who's been around baseball, you're tall, you're lean.
Yeah.
It's a lot easier to generate velocity on your pitches. It's on the New York Times website. The author's name is Scott Cacciola, Cacciola. It is a terrific story. If you want to sort of find out why this happened, and why she was able to do what she was able to do, it's a terrific piece.
I'll say this. This is why I love baseball, because there's all shapes, forms, sizes, women, guys, whatever the case may be. It doesn't matter how big or tall, or it just matters how big your heart is. And obviously she has a huge heart and she loves sports. That's the whole point. Getting young people into sports is just, you know, it's great to watch and it's great for baseball. Mm-hmm. And it's just, you know, when so many bad things are going on in the world and you can turn a TV on and see that, man, come on.
Well,
who doesn't want to see that?
It's great to see somebody having fun, doing something really well. And, you know, I mean, people look at parents and parents involved in sports, and, you know, every now and then you get the odd bad apple. But this Little League World Series, there was a lot of cool stuff. The coach from the Massachusetts team who had his kids around when they were crying, you know, and gave them a pep talk after the game, it went viral. The other aspect of this story, and I know you just got a few minutes here, but I want to mention this. Victoria Ruelas is now 37 years old, and she played in this tournament in 1989 for a team from San Pedro, California.
Mm-hmm.
They played a team from Venezuela, and she was talking about how after the game, the Venezuelan players came over to shake her hand. She said that never happened when she played in California, when she played in her little league in California. But the Venezuelan players came over to
shake
her.
Maybe she's really good.
Yeah, she was. She hit a ton of home runs. She admits she hit a slump in the World Series. And it's a great story. She's talking about, she said, I can remember all my at-bats. Her only base hit was a shot up the middle. Anyhow, that's a shout-out to
love baseball.
A shout-out to Monet Davis and a shout-out.